on the bed. Ruprecht stares vacantly into space, his body drawn in around him.
Skippy's dead, Blowjob! He's dead! And you can't bring him back! Not you, not every bent scientist in every laboratory in the world!
Breathing heavily, Dennis pauses, then turns his dreadful gaze on the others.
You bummers need to get it through your heads that this is real! None of the stupid bullshit we do to distract ourselves is going to help anymore. Spider-Man isn't going to help. Eminem isn't going to help. Some fucking gay, lame, tinfoil time machine isn't going to help. All that stuff is over, don't you see? He's dead. He's dead, and he's going to stay dead forever.
Stop saying that.
Ruprecht gasps.
Dead.
Chants Dennis.
Dead-o, Deadsville, Dead-O-Rama, Deadington.
I mean it.
Dead-dead-dead.
To the tune of La Marseillaise.
Dead, 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 dead.
Ruprecht rises from the bed and, inflating himself like one of those Japanese puffer fish, to surprisingly alarming effect, hurls himself at Dennis. The latter throws a punch that lands directly into Ruprecht's midriff, but his fist simply gets lost in the folds of Ruprecht's flab. A split-second expression of horror crosses his face before he is bowled over and disappears underneath his antagonist, who proceeds to bounce on top of him like a malevolent Buddha.
Stop! Stop!
Jeff cries.
Come on, you're hurting him!
It takes all four of them to haul Ruprecht away. Dragging himself up from the floor, Dennis dusts himself down and, with white cheeks, levels a maledictive finger.
Skippy's dead, Blowjob! Even if your stupid plans ever worked, it'd still be too late. So stop getting everyone's hopes up for nothing.
With that, he hobbles out of the room. As soon as he's gone, the others cluster around Ruprecht to sympathize and reassure. Don't listen to him, Ruprecht. Tell us the rest of your plan, Ruprecht. But Ruprecht won't say anything. And after a while, one by one, they drift away. When they have gone, Ruprecht lies for a long time on his duvet, Optimus Prime, leader of the Autobots, held loosely in his hands. On the other side of the room, the empty bed, its sheets turned down, crisp and hospital white, roars at him like a locomotive. The sun has set long ago, and the only light in the room now comes from the computer screen, where SETI diligently chomps through the barrage of unintelligible noise that hits the earth every second, searching for anything that might resemble a pattern. For some minutes, Ruprecht watches from his bed as the bars file across the screen and drop off the far side. Then he rises and shuts the computer down. The school board sits in conclave for almost 3 hours, before Brother Jonas knocks on the door of his fourth-year class and summons Howard to the acting principal's office. Tom's is the only face not to turn his way when he enters. As well as Father Green, the automator, and Father Boland, the school president, one of those sleek, silver-haired, ageless men who managed to connote prestige and power without ever having expressed a single memorable thought, there are two men Howard does not know. One is a priest, small and gaunt, with a foxy, Jesuitical cast of features, and a mobile jaw that works constantly, as though chewing some indigestible foodstuff. The other, an innocuous, balding man in rimless glasses, perhaps 40. Brother Jonas hovers by the door. Trudy, the only woman in the room, brandishes her pen and minute pad expectantly.
Well, before anything else, let's make sure we're all reading from the same page here.
The automator announces heavily.
Howard, do you have anything you want to add, subtract, or modify with regard to the statement you made this morning?
Seven pairs of eyes bore into him.
No,
Howard says.
Because these are very serious allegations you're making?
The automator warns.
They aren't allegations, Greg. I passed on to you exactly what Tom... what was said to me by Mr. Roach last night.
This meets with a cold silence. The silver-haired president permits himself a slight shake of the head. Howard flushes.
Are you suggesting I shouldn't have passed it on? Are you suggesting I should have listened to him confess a crime and then clapped him on the shoulder and sent him home right as rain? Is that it?
No one's suggesting anything, Howard.
The automator snaps.
Let's all try to keep a professional attitude here.
Eyes closed. He massages his temples a moment, then says,
Okay. Let's go over this one more time. Trudy?
Rising from her chair, Trudy arranges her papers and reads, in a clear, neutral voice, Howard's account of his adventure of last night. How at some time between 11 and 12 he had opened the door to find Mr. Roach there in an agitated state. How Mr. Roach told him, after he brought him in and made him tea, that the night of the junior swimming team's meet in Thurles, Daniel Juster had come to his hotel room suffering from pains in his leg. How, after Mr. Roach had treated him manually for cramps, the boy became upset and told him that his mother, who had been supposed to attend the meet, was extremely ill. How Juster had grown more and more distressed until Mr. Roach made the decision to give him a sedative in the form of painkillers that he carried to treat his spine injury. Shortly afterwards, the boy lost consciousness from the effects of the painkillers, at which point Mr. Roach sexually molested him.
Apart from a panic attack on the bus back to Seabrook the following day, for which he gave him another sedative, Mr. Roach told me that the boy showed no signs of being aware of what had happened. But then, last Wednesday, 3 days before the junior team's semi-final meet in Ballinasloe, Juster wrote him a letter telling him he was leaving the swimming team. Mr. Roach grew alarmed. He contacted Juster's father and persuaded him to discourage the boy from quitting. Juster's mother's health was precarious and he knew the boy was afraid of doing or saying anything that might upset her. His father called Juster and at that point the boy agreed to go along to the meet. Shortly afterwards, however, he overdosed on painkillers.
Trudy, as she concludes, cannot resist raising her lowered eyes for a swift left-right sweep, with the satisfaction of a pupil who has performed her lesson well.
You're happy with that?
The automator puts to Howard.
I'm not happy with it.
Howard mutters. The automator switches to his neighbour.
Tom?
Tom says nothing. A tear slides like a raindrop down his stony cheek. There is a collective sighing and creak of chairs. The little foxy man takes a fob from his pocket, fogs the glass with his breath, and buffs it with his cuff, aspirating,
Dare, dare, dare.
The automator folds his brow in his hand. Emerging blinking, he says,
Jesus Christ, Tom. Were you planning to do it again? Were you bringing him down there to do it again?
No!
Tom blurts.
No.
He does not look up.
I wanted to show him that it was all right. That was why I wanted him to go. If this time it was all right, it might be as if the last time never. I didn't mean for this to happen. I loved that boy. I love all my boys.
The automator considers this impassively, his mouth a tight line. Then, turning to the table at large, he says,
Well, look. We need to decide what the hell we're going to do here.
There is a general susurrus of papers and trouser legs.
I'm not a man of the cloth. I don't have a direct line to God, so it could be I'm all wrong about this. But what I'm thinking is that there is not much to be gained by taking it to the next level.
By the next level, you mean turning it over to the police?
Father Green clarifies in his arch manner. At the word, Tom lets out a moan and reburies his face in his hands.
That's exactly what I mean, Father. The plain fact of it is, the boy is dead. There is nothing we can do to change that. If we could turn back time, we would, but we can't. And at the risk of sounding cynical, I think we have to ask ourselves now how it would serve any of us, and I include in that the boy's family, to bring the police into this. The benefits, as I see them, are pretty few. On the other hand, the cost to the school, as well as to his family, would be enormous.
Howard starts.
Wait, are you proposing we just brush this under the carpet?
Damn it, Howard, just listen to me for 5 seconds, can't you? There's more to think of here than just some abstract notion of justice. This kind of thing can ruin a school. I've seen it happen. Even as it is, I've got 4 sets of parents threatening to pull out their kids. This comes out, and they'll leave in their droves. Every boy who's ever stubbed his toe here will be filing a lawsuit. As for the media, they'll have a field day. They've been waiting a lifetime for something like this. We'll be lucky if we're left with so much as a blackboard by the end of it. So, before you get up on your high horse, you tell me, Howard, who gains exactly from dragging this whole thing into the open. Just as parents? You think this is going to help them at all? His sick mother? Or the boys? Think it'll be good for them?
Howard does not reply, just scowls.
When these matters arose in the past...
The foxy, delicate priest, when he speaks, has exactly the voice that Howard would have guessed. High and feminine, dry and friable as tissue paper.
We always found it more satisfactory to handle them in private.
I agree with Father Casey here,
the automator says.
It seems to me that the best way to deal with this is internally, through our own existing disciplinary channels.
As we started, so shall we go on. Is that it?
Father Green addresses the dapper little man, who only laughs mirthlessly and places a hand on his companion's knee.
After all, if it were up to you, who of us would not be clapped in irons?
Something grotesque about his laughter sets off a trigger inside Howard. While the conversation flows back and forth around him, he stumbles unhearing through it, nauseous and dizzy, as if he's been drugged, until he sees his own hand rising in front of him and hears his voice say,
Wait, wait! A boy is dead! Juster is dead! It doesn't matter what the school has to gain or not gain. We can't let...
Absurdly, he turns to Tom here.
No offense, Tom, but we can't just let this... go!
The silver-haired president starts making noises about reviews and hearings and sanctions, but the automator hushes him with a hand.
Howard!
He's right.
Father Green interjects.
Excuse me, Father, he's not right. Howard, no one's saying we're letting this go. No one's saying we should forget about Juster. But if Tom goes to trial, it'll be a kangaroo court and you know it. They'll send him down without a second thought, even though the facts are in actuality far from clear.
The facts are perfectly clear, Greg. He made a full confession.
I mean the facts, the circumstances of Daniel Juster's death. We don't know what was going through that kid's mind. We'll never know. Who of us can say for certain that these events that took place involving Tom were finally and definitively what pushed him over the edge? We know that he had other things bothering him. His sick mother, for instance. And this girl. This business with the girl.
Yes, but...
And the fact of the matter is that these pills that Tom allegedly gave him, there's a question mark over whether he had any awareness at all of what happened. So setting aside the rights and the wrongs of it, can we genuinely...
Jesus, Greg! He took him into his room and drugged him and abused him! How could you even...
You settle down there!
The automator cuts him off.
Settle down, mister. Here at Seabrook, we judge a man by the sum of his actions. The sum... In this case, we have a man with an unparalleled dedication to this school and to the boys of this school. Does one error of judgment, however grievous, does that cancel out at a stroke all the good he's done? The good of that care?
An error of judgment?
Howard says, dumbfounded.
That's right. Any one of us.
An error of judgment.
That's what I said. Damn it!
The automator bellows, flaring brick red.
You had one of your own, or don't you remember? £3.5 million down the Swanee in under a minute. Under a minute! When you came here, you were the laughingstock of the City of London. Unemployable. But who took you in? Who took you in when no one else would? This school, that's who, because we look after our own. That's what care means.
How the hell?
Howard on his feet.
Does losing money compare with physically drugging and abusing...
I'll tell you how.
The automator rising too to tower above him.
You take a look at this man, Howard. Before you start laying blame, you take a good look at him. This man was a hero. This man was going to be one of the all-time sporting greats of his country. Instead, he's a cripple in constant physical pain because of you, because of your cowardice.